You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Stardom Road Podcast here on the Countout Podcast Network. I am your host, as always, Scott Edwards, and with me, as always, is my good friend Trent. Trent, how are we today?
I'm good. You withheld the start a bit. It was just here's the music. The music's finished, and then pause, and then like bam, like you came in with some energy this week.
Yeah. I like to change it up now that we're on video. You know, it's a little more like bang type thing. I totally didn't forget to unmute myself. But we're here.
At least you didn't start talking like 5 seconds in and realize no one can hear me.
No, I knew I muted myself. I just wasn't paying attention. I thought the song was a little bit longer. But we're here. We're here to talk about Utami Hayashishita's title reign once again, part two. The second half following the big Shuri match that, of course, is a pretty important match in the history of Stardom. This will be a lot of fun because we're not only going to talk about the final couple matches of her title reign, we are, of course, also going to talk about the legacy of the reign, the importance of the reign, and so on and so forth. So this should be, the title matches don't have as much conversation because pretty much from the after the Natsuko match, it's just, all right, let's get through these matches so we can get to Shuri, you know? So it's like there's not too much to talk about because there wasn't a lot of drama. But there's still some great matches to have a conversation about. And then, of course, the big main event at the first ever Stardom Dream Queendom. So that's the beauty of this. I always love having these conversations, obviously, because a lot of what we do here is just talk up wrestlers. And Utami, one of our favorites, is always a good wrestler to talk about. And she's obviously kind of busy these days with getting ready for Mari Gold's debut.
How convenient we're covering Utami around this time.
I know. Timing is crazy. Who could have thought? But now that we are here in the second half, let's talk about like the feeling after the Shuri match, right? Excitement is high. Every match feels a little bit bigger. And of course, the first match to follow was Natsuko Tora, the ultimate heel of the company. A big time switch from the Shuri match, because it's not going to be this big work rate classic, but it's going to be, you know, and especially once you watch it, I remember going to this match and I said, listen, I think this match is going to be great because I believed in, and as we've learned through the years, these two have great chemistry.
Yes.
So I was pretty confident. And for 11 minutes and 30 seconds, I felt pretty good about it. But of course, things happened. It didn't go the way I expected it to. But I actually did think it was a good follow-up because it was so different from the Shuri match.
The worst thing they could have possibly done after Shuri was to throw us another similar match. You know, like, if you'd given us, like, looking at the matches that follow this Natsuko Tora match, all of them could have conveniently been the post-Shuri match, except maybe the Shuri 2. And it would have been like, oh, it was good, but it wasn't Shuri Utami.
Right.
With Natsuko Tora, no one was expecting that, because Tora is a little bit more hit and miss as a wrestler. She needs the right opponent, and Utami is absolutely the right opponent. But at this point, I don't think we were fully aware of that yet.
Yep.
And you just knew, like, this is going to have Oedotai antics. It's going to be a little bit more rough around the edges. You're going to see the outside-the-ring stuff more, some weapons brought in. You knew it was going to be a different type of match. So I absolutely agree it was the right move to do. But let's not forget, Natsuko Tora at this time is probably the hottest she's been as a professional wrestler. She's coming off the big coup of Fukigen Death and, more importantly, Starlight Kid from Stars. Yep. Her as a character was finally clicking as the Oedotai leader, because all through 2020, she did her best to make Oedotai work with her as a leader. It wasn't, But now a year later, everything started to click. Her character work was better. Her mic work was better. And she was starting to find it in the ring.
Right.
And you'd sort of see that when she would eventually come back after, you know, taking the time off from this match. Just the in-ring style just started to click a bit more and make more sense for her. Unfortunately, we don't get to fully realize what this version of Natsukatora is because after 11 minutes, the knee goes pop.
Yeah.
But it was really good. Like, they started off with the chain wrestling. It was good. Like, the match wasn't quite blood feudy enough to warrant the skipping that. And Tora's kind of trying to outwork Utami there. And then you get the madness of Oedo Tai antics. I forgot for a moment that Momo Watanabe was on the Queen's Quest side in this match, and she's protecting Utami. The dive from the top rope with the rose in his mouth into the table spot, I'm shocked Utami's back wasn't cut up from that. Because we've seen that spot a few times where the table just kind of creates a hole.
Yeah.
Boom, and they fall through. And like Julie's had that happen where her back gets cut up, and I was expecting to see blood pouring. And then Tora waits a bit in the ring. She goes to come out. She jumps off the apron, and she crumples.
Freak injury.
Yeah. I kind of, at the moment, I'd forgotten what had happened. Rewatching this match, it's one of those things like, all she does is jumps down, and instead of landing on both feet, she wants to get a little kick in on Utami, which means she lands a little bit too much to one side, only landing on one leg. The knee gives way, which makes sense because the apron's like a 5 foot drop, a bad angle, and it just goes. It's a horrific timing, horrible situation. Handled well, though. Like, they didn't mess around with it.
No. It really was picking up. Like,
yes.
You know, Utami's doing dives to the outside through tables. Like, it's crazy.
That was Tora who did it.
Oh, wait, Tora, sorry.
Yeah, with Utami does it in my bad.
Yes. I'm thinking of the second match.
Yes.
Which was really good, by the way. Which, again, made me confirm, like, oh, my God, what could have been, right? Which I do love that callback. But, Natsuko was going all out. And like you said, red hot after the Stars feud. And I remember some, like, it wasn't a lot of people, but some people were like, you know, wouldn't it be crazy to go with the big, scary heel champion for once? You know, a staple in Joshi history, obviously.
Yes.
And Natsuko had finally reached that level of, being convincing as that force. Mm. And she was the perfect person for Utami at this time. And then, like you said, just things don't go right. That knee goes out and the match is over. And it's just like, not only was this the biggest match of Natsuko Tora's career, but it was a huge match for Utami, momentum on her side, right? More people likely watching this match than any other until the Dream Queendom show, because it's the momentum from that Shuri match. And it just, the one thing that could have went wrong essentially.
Yeah.
It's a shame. And you know, they had this Utami had this lovely promo after where she promised, like, I'm gonna do my best to hold this title for when you come back. Obviously, that wasn't gonna happen. Natsuko was out for a very long time, over a year. But you know, it was a great build up. It was a great, I remember being excited about it, and they really were doing everything right. So it's a shame that it had to end this way. But you know, that's how wrestling goes sometimes.
It's a real what if situation because, like, if Natsuko Tora was able to stay healthy after this match, presumably Queen's Quest and Oedo Tai keep telling their story a bit because, like, it'd been built up as Tora was satisfied breaking up Stars and now she turned her attention to Queen's Quest. Does the Momo turn happen earlier potentially? Like, what stories do they tell in the aftermath of this? And I think they pivoted away from it because they're like, we need to get Oedo Tai in a fresh situation now because they didn't have the personnel. They had Starlight Kid, they had Konami, they had Saki Kashima as kind of their big three now. And that's good, but you lose Tora as the leader, as the guiding influence there is a rough loss. And
now, notably, I thought they
did well, but.
Oedo Tai's 2021 is one of the craziest because they were also going to be losing Konami at the end of the year, which is where Momo comes into play. But yeah, crazy year. But Utami would then move on from there, and then we would. It's really weird the timing of this. So this match is following the 5-Star Grand Prix. So it's over 3 months after the Torah match. I know Stardom viewers now, if you've watched the past couple of years, you're like, what? Not a title defense in the middle of a tournament? What is that? I know. Scheduling. It's a son of a bitch.
Well, it's not going to happen this year either because they realize running 2 month tournaments isn't always the best move.
So instead, it's 1 month tournament, 75 dates.
Let's hope they don't squeeze a title match into that.
I don't think it's possible, but they could try. Anyways, so they kind of go backwards in a lot of ways. And, you know, because they add a no time limit ruling to this, which is kind of following the Shuri match, but it's also following the 5-star Grand Prix where draws happen, obviously, and so on. But, you know, those were 20 minute time limits. So it's like, did you really need that? So Takumi Iroha and Utami Hayashishita wrestle for 30 minutes and 52 seconds in the big title defense. Of course, Takumi had just come back from her own knee injury to join the 5-star Grand Prix, which is still psycho to think about, by the way. But they had gone to a time limit draw at Corrigan Hall to make this match happen. And I remember how this happened. Like, Takumi just ran out there. She's like, hey, me, I'll take it. I'll take the title shot, which was very funny. And this match suffers from the no time limit rule because the entire purpose was we have to get past the 30 minutes to prove a point, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And I said this to you after I watched it. I said, you can cut 10 minutes off this match, and it is a great match.
Yes.
But there are 10 minutes of this match. It's like the first 10 minutes that nothing is achieved. It's just like basic grappling, literally wasting the clock, essentially. It's like, and it's such a shame because these two have great chemistry. You saw it in the 20 minute time limit. You saw it in the, especially the final 15 minutes of this match. And I was just sitting there, I was like, why did this have to happen? And it was to play to the Shuri rule again, obviously, with the no time limit, which would come into the fold later on. But such a shame. Because it is very similar to the Shuri matches in a lot of ways, because obviously Takumi is the, you know, same type of offense. There's power, there's the kicks. And the last 10 minutes, again, fantastic. But it wasn't what it was supposed to be. Still a really good match, but definitely missed the bar. I understood what they were going for. You know, just not to go over every move from a 30-plus minute match. But the main parts is, you know, we're going for that running three, as Takumi does. Utami avoids it, and ultimately it was who could get their Razor's Edge version done first. It was Utami who got the win with the BT bomb. Like I said, if you've never seen this match, you don't have to go out of your way to see it. But if you want to watch it, you will get a great 15 minutes of wrestling in that second half.
You've just got to watch a 10-minute prologue.
The
biggest issue is they learned the wrong lesson from the Shuri match. That was so well received and people were praising it up so much. And part of it was because they went 43 minutes, but they went 43 minutes without slowing down. And I think they saw that and they're like, okay, this is what we need to do to draw the attention. We need to have these long epics. You don't need to have these 30-minute plus epics to tell a good wrestling story with the talent they've got. And what made it worse was the opening 10, 15 minutes that you were talking about is a lot of legwork from Utami, which makes sense in a vacuum because Takumi Iroha, she's coming off a knee injury.
Leg didn't work.
Take out the leg, takes away her kicks. But the problem is, Takumi sells it in the sense of like she'll do all the big moves, and then she'll be like, oh, my knee, and hold it for a second, then keep going.
Right.
I don't blame Takumi. She's popular because she does the rapid fire kicks, and her offense is electric for someone of her size. To sell the leg, you have to take that away.
Yeah.
But what it did was then make that 10 to 15 minutes from what Utami did pointless. It makes Utami's legwork look weak. By contrast, when you go back to the Momo match from the end of 2020, Utami does some legwork in that as well, and Momo basically goes on to no sell it, but she only does it for about 3 to 4 minutes. Yeah. So to put it in context, like it's like in a WWE 2K game where like you do some body work and like the legs are yellow or orange. So it's like, yeah, it's hurt, but like you can work through it. What they did to Takumi should have been like legitimately injured. She should have been struggling to get moves off. And you'll see that in a later match here where leg work is done and it pays off later in the match. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, it's the Shuri match. Yeah. You don't see that here. And whether that's bad planning, whether it's Takumi going, no, I don't really want to sell this. I don't know. It's a good match. I still think it's better than the first Mika match in terms of the Itami Reign.
Oh, absolutely.
But it is a disappointing match given the level of talent.
Yeah, it is for me probably on base with the second Mika match, which I did like a lot more. Mm. Probably favor the Mika match just a little more because of expectations at the time.
Yep.
But it, you know, it's when you watch those last 10 minutes and you're like, these two could have had one of the best matches of the year if they didn't learn the wrong thing from this. Because Takumi, you know, bless her heart, for someone that came back from injury, still had that explosiveness throughout that tournament, as we saw. Some of the best matches of the year were from her in that tournament. Yeah. So it was a letdown while still being a very good match. It's like,
it speaks to the new expectations.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change the fact that ultimately it doesn't deliver to what we expected.
I thought Itami had a very good performance here, all things considered. It's just like they were asking for them to do something that I don't think either of them were comfortable with doing. Like Takumi doesn't wrestle 30 minutes all the time, really at all.
Mm.
And Itami did it once.
Yeah.
With
it Shuri. Should be a rare. It should be a real rarity that happens, because then it feels special. Right. If all these matches are going 25, 35 minutes, then it loses the impact when one match does. Still a good match, but like if you turned it on, went and made yourself a drink, cup of coffee or something, and came back and you're like, oh, okay, they're halfway through the leg work, you're not missing anything.
No. So they come back after this match. Two challenges were made. Hizuki, who had returned on this show, which was the 10th anniversary grand final, Osaka Dream Cinderella, and Mika as well. And so they would make back-to-back challenges for Kawasaki Super Wars and Tokyo Super Wars, which would bring us, of course, into Queendom. So let's talk about the Hizuki match. This is a match that I really enjoy because you do see Hizuki like start to figure it out again within this match. She kind of turns back the clock a little bit, brings that aggression that is a Hizuki staple. And they work a really good match together, especially because at this point, Hizuki had been back less than a month in pro wrestling, right? Big ask for her. And the way they work this match is that they really build Hizuki to be the underdog. This is one of the true matches of Utami's reign where she is the dominant force, and it's beating down Hizuki and just seeing if she can come back. And it's very interesting because if you watch some of Hizuki's best matches from before this, she was often the aggressor. And it was a different change of pace for her. But once she gets going, that aggressor comes out and makes for a better match. The air raid crash in this, we love to talk about that air raid crash, was disgusting.
Hizuki saw how B Priestley took it a couple of months prior and thought, I can do that better. And by better, we mean worse. Because this one feels intentional.
Yeah, this one was gross. Head hit the apron, just crashing to the first floor.
Yeah. Like, she somehow manages to twist 180 degrees in the air raid crash.
Mm-hmm.
You're not meant to be able to do that, let alone actually do that. The arms flailing around as she's taking it. It was an ugly bump, but Hizuki is really good at taking some nasty bumps.
And she is.
Like, just taking them, I guess, the right way to make them look gnarly but be okay.
So she, you know, they fight back, they trade shots as you expect. Hizuki gets on the aggression, she hits the, and in my quotes in my notes, brain buster for a great near fall. Yes. But the one of the best falls of Utami's entire reign comes on the Hizuki straw. You heard a crowd react to this. Obviously, the crowd's still a clapping crowd at the time. Wasn't a loud clapping crowd either, but this got them good. It's the beauty of the Hazuki Straw, obviously. Yes. Beautiful near fall. Ultimately, Utami gets back on offense, gets the BT bomb as you'd expect. But it's a really good match, and it's the match that really helped Hazuki get back to being Hazuki. It was bold to put her right into a world title match a month later, but because, you know, if you go back and watch the match with Koguma, it was very clear she was rusty. Compared to what Hazuki was. Not a bad match or anything. It's just like, that's not Hazuki. This was Hazuki in a different role, which was very unique, and it brought the best out of her. It showed Utami as the dominant champ, something, again, we weren't used to, and we really see that through the rest of her reign, which is, you know, two matches. But it's a really fun one to watch, especially if you've never seen it.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Is this Hazuki's best performance? No. But when you look at the circumstances surrounding it, as you said, less than a month back after a couple of years off, she looks remarkably like she's been wrestling that whole time. Like, the only reason she looks a little bit off is because we know how good peak Hazuki truly looks. And she's, yeah, keeps the aggressiveness going. And that's something that always popped that clap crowd, was when Hazuki started to really fire up, because there's a certain just unhinged side of her that just gets the crowd like in awe. You see it in this match, you see it in other Hazuki matches, whether there's a clap crowd or not. But like, she's someone, like, if she'd been there through the whole clap crowd, I think she would have been seen as even more of a valuable hand, because she would have been the one to get the crowd going, oh, kind of like you said on the Hazuki Straw, which was right in front of Azumi. And that whole sequence there that led to that near fall was as if Hazuki was channeling Azumi for that brief period. I loved that. It was, yeah, harken back to the Utami Hazuki matches, Utami Azumi matches we've seen, even if they weren't the title. Just a really fun match. Like, it's not a 5-star match, but it's just like, you chuck it on, you're in for
a great title defense.
Yeah. And it's what they needed after the Tora match and then the slightly underwhelming Takumi match. This was a great reminder. Oh, yeah, we've got two great talents here, and you're going to keep seeing them.
And I think this was, like, again, further proof that Hazuki's really one of just the best challengers in wrestling.
As you don't always want to be that, though.
I know. It's tough. But as we've learned through the years, she has won per year since she's come back. One just that absolutely, you know, blows everyone away.
Set your clocks, 2024 at some point.
You know, like, 2022 was her tag team year, obviously, but she was so great in those tag team matches. 2023, of course, we already have the 2024 one with her and Mei Sarah.
Oh, no, I think we get a top title.
Maybe. I think we do, too. But, again, that kind of plays to, like, oh, you can just plug her into these roles, and she's so good at it, but that can also be a bad thing. But let's get to the final successful defense of Utami's reign here, which, of course, was against Mika, the only match they ran back besides, of course, Shuri. And this was much better than the first one. You see the growth of Mika from the beginning of the year. You see the growth of Utami from the beginning of the year. It's not their best match ever. We just saw that recently. But you see them build every time they face off. And they played to their strength, which was running into each other as many times as possible. I did like in this match as well that Mika used Utami's signature sleeper spot. I thought that was great to try to, like, slow down the match. You know, and this is a very, like, this is the most telling dominant performance of Utami, because at the end of this match, Mika has nothing left.
Yeah.
Like, she showed that while she grew, she had nothing left against this, like, super Utami that we now see in front of us. And Utami pretty much, like, ends it gracefully. She, you know, hits a lariat, hits the BT bomb, puts her away. But there's a lot to like about this, and it's really, I think this is the match that Micah really started building from. Obviously, you look at that five-star Grand Prix as well. Mm. Coming out of that, how much better she was. And then building on this to, of course, where she is now as world champion. It's a match like this that she used to develop and get better for these big spots.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was around this time period where the full potential of Micah was starting to be realized. Because we knew when she first came into Stardom, oh, she's pretty good. Like, they've got something here they can develop. But it was still a little hit and miss. It was still, like, finding that groove. She worked out what she's best at through that five-star Grand Prix. And she'd spend about the next 6 months perfecting the in-ring style and then go to work on the character work. And from this moment through the next, basically, two and a bit years, you see that growth until eventually you got to making the All-Star Dream Queen, Dream Queendom. I always have to stop and think, what are we talking about with the pay-per-view names? Where she wins the title from Suzu Suzuki. It all basically starts around this time period.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful, like, having watched that Kurikan match and then watching this match, because her growth is astronomical in this period. Because they don't wrestle that different a match from Kurikan Hall to this one here. It's the same basic concept.
Nearly identical time, too.
Everything is executed far better. The slow spots are earned a lot more in this time. Whereas in the Kurikan Hall match, it felt like they were going slow just to kind of get through it. Here, it was now going slow because they've just taken big moves. They've done the high spots and letting the crowd kind of breathe a bit. The high spots were far more impressive. They felt far smoother. The interactions were a lot stronger. It's a marked improvement because both Utami and Micah, but I think especially Micah really, had made that jump at this point. And they'd go on to have better matches, as they should. They're still both very young in their careers at this point. But just within the space of less than a year, you see how much better in the same kind of spot, in a bigger spot really, because this is on a pay-per-view. Just how far both of these two had managed to come in that time.
I think it's very important too, when talking about Tommy's reign, how she kind of raised up two opponents, right? Hazuki coming back, obviously, and Micah here. Like, it was a second shot from Micah to show she can be a main event player. Mm. And, she walked out of this saying, and I remember people at the time saying, like, okay, she can be a world champion a few years down the road. And look where we are now, right?
And that's around this point, I thought I'd put all my eggs in the wrong My Hima basket.
Which you did. which you sure did. But with Utami, I just have such an appreciation for who she was at this time, because again, I can't stress enough how much better she'd be a year after this, 2 years after this. But she was someone raising people up as a champion, and it's the conversation that's old as time, right? It's the belt doesn't make the champion makes the belt, and that's really what she did here as champion in one of the top. Like the toughest reign besides Mayu before her, right?
Yep.
This is the second toughest reign. No crowd ever cheering for her.
And that's not because she sucked.
No.
There's been champions where the crowd don't cheer, like Jinder Mahal. Yeah. But Jinder Mahal wasn't performing to a clap crowd.
Right. Like, she was at such a different level at this period that, she was undeniable. And going into that last match, let's talk about it. This will be the match we talk about the most, obviously, here on the show. It was the World of Stardom Championship and SWA Championship on the line. No time limit. Stardom Dream Queendom, Ryogoku Sumo Hall. First time ever, as big as it gets. Mm. And, this match was what made Stardom Dream Queendom, obviously, a staple. And it's because of the story from their first match and, Shuri making it through that five-star Grand Prix and Utami coming in feeling like a bigger and better champion from when they last faced. I remember at the time, it was pretty split. Like, you think back, it's like, how do anyone think Shuri wasn't winning?
Yeah.
It's because Utami had been so great. And there was still room for Utami for more title matches because obviously at that time, Momo had flipped. She flipped to Uedo Tai. That screamed, oh, that's a pretty big title match if you want to do that. It, you know, there was just, and at the time, they had not done the Tam match. Tam had lost earlier in the night on this show. Like, there was just so much working to this that it said, this isn't 100% a Shuri win. And for 36 minutes and 33 seconds, these two wrestled in Sumo Hall, tore down the house. Listen, they were never going to match that first match because the you know, we are recording this one day removed from Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson. And there's something about expectations going into a match. There's expectations going into a match when they've never wrestled before, like they did, and absolutely killing it. And then there's expectations coming into a match where you already had something to go off of. And if you don't reach that, people are going to find a letdown. Listen, I rewatched this match. This match is a great match. The problem is they have three outstanding matches, and this is the third one. And it's not their fault. They're just that good. You know, it's like, it's not fair. And this match is hard hitting. It is dramatic. It is. It also doesn't have a crowd either, which the other one didn't either. But that other one was so unpredictable in the way it evolved. With the no time limit, you do hurt them because you are sitting there expecting the time. But they were so good at packing the time that it didn't hurt as much. And the beauty of this match, which you brought up earlier, was working that leg.
Yeah.
And Shuri was so... She was on another level at this point, right? Like, as much as we are praising Utami throughout this entire episode, Shuri was the best wrestler in the world at this very moment.
Yeah.
And you saw it in this match, whether it was her taking the nasty bumps, she took a power bomb to the floor. Like, it was like a snap power bomb. She got caught, bam, down. She took a... Shocker, a nasty air raid crash on the apron, which they were just trying to top that B1, I guess. She had a nasty spill as well, but time and time again in this match, she worked the leg, whether it was figure fours, kicking the leg, and it worked towards the end. Utami hits the BT bomb. She has the win in front of her, but she crashes down to the floor in agony and has to crawl over and crawl over. And when she finally gets there, Shuri doesn't even kick out. She just has the wherewithal to grab the rope. It's one of my favorite moments of, like, this entire reign. Because, like, Utami had it. She had what it took to beat her. But Shuri knew the game plan, and that's take out the power wrestler's leg just enough. And they keep wrestling. They keep wrestling. Shuri just brings a full-on onslaught from there. Shuri hits the Ryuin. That's kicked out of, which got a great reaction. And then, of course, she debuts the beautiful new super finisher that, you know, won her so many matches from there on out. I would love to have counted how many, like, what I wish I knew what Shuri's record was from the start of the 5-star to the end of her World of Stardom title reign. Because I feel like I watched, because I, you know, going into this match, I was like, all right, this is where she debuted it. And I got so used to seeing it. So I was like, not thinking of that, because the, you know, the commentary team freaks out when she hits it, because it looks like the one winged angel. Obviously it's the Shusakai, and she hits it great the first time. It's very impactful, and she wins. And it's always weird when they debut new finishers. And this is a
they love doing it in Stardom,
and in like the biggest matches. It's like it'd be one thing if you debuted it in, like, I don't know, the 5-star Grand Prix, and then it won you the match. She just debuted it here, and ultimately it became the most devastating move in wrestling for a good year. But just a fantastic match, a fantastic story told, which I think is a very key part of this, right? in the lead up to this match, Utami became this dominant champion. How do you cut down the champion? You attack the leg of the powerful champion. And in the end, the powerful champion hits you with it, but you did enough to survive. And that's the beauty of this match.
It's just quickly on the finisher thing. It makes sense in like a pure kayfabe context because you don't want to reveal your secret weapon. It's like if you're playing basketball, you keep a play up your sleeve to so that the other team can't scout it. So like Utami's getting lifted up there and she's thinking, what the hell is going on? What's she going to do?
It's like when Tam hit the violet screwdriver the first time.
Yeah. And didn't win.
Which didn't win with. Yeah. Yeah.
Now so it's her finisher. Sense in that respect, but in the world of pro wrestling, it's so weird because like, typically, the fans are waiting to see the finisher, the move they know ends the match. And then they see this move they've never seen before. And it is a little bit of like a, even if you kind of know the meta game of Stardom, where it's like, oh, that's the new super finisher to win the match. You're always kind of like, is that going to be the move? Is that the one? But yeah, this match is just wonderfully executed. And the benefit is, yeah, like there was that element of, does Utami win? Because all through this year has been building up your next superstar, your top star in Utami Hashishista, the one who's been treated as the heir ascendant basically from the day she walked in. So even if in many ways all signs pointed to Shuri winning, you could see them saying, well, this is our new Io Shirai. We're giving her the win against Shuri. We've told the story of her having to overcome this final boss level character, surviving the draw, having to grow, get better, have to learn how to deal with it, and then go all the way. But Shuri at this point was just like a freight train. It was the right call. I'm glad they made that decision. Because, yeah, from the five-star Grand Prix, which, as a reminder, wasn't clear-cut that it was going to be Shuri at the start of it all. A lot of people had Julia winning that match. A lot of people thought we were getting the first ever Julia versus Utami match at Dream Kingdom.
How's that going?
Oh, how little we knew.
Yeah, how's that going?
Yeah. But yeah, it was, they told that, like, if that was an accident, if it was meant to be Julia, they had to move to Shuri, or whether the original plan was Julia and they saw how good Shuri was and pivoted her, whatever. Greatest accident in Stardom history in that sense, because the story of Utami's reign all comes down to in two parts, pre-Shuri, post-Shuri, ends on a fantastic high note, and it gives Utami something to build on from after the title reign. Because so often champions kind of, they lose the title, like, okay, what do we do with them next? Because you naturally cool them off a bit after a long reign, but you need to find something to give them to keep going. Utami now had that. She had a year-long reign as champion, year-plus long, but she had to beat Shuri. That was her new goal. That was her new task. Gave her something to do, Shuri something to do. It's not as good as the first match. But if you ask me what they had to do to beat that first match, I don't know. Like, I watched this match, and I don't see a point where it's like, oh, if they'd done this a little bit differently, it would have been better. It's a fantastic match. It's just... It was coming in with the weight of expectation of the first. Whereas, as you said, that first match, there is that sense halfway through the match, you're going, oh, we're watching something special here.
Right.
And you can't replicate that feeling in a rematch because you know what's coming here. Like, there's the floor has been set almost impossibly high. And the fact they delivered a match as good as this speaks to how good both of them are. Do not sleep on this match just because you've only heard about the 43-minute draw. This one is equally worthy of your attention.
I think all three of their World of Stardom title matches are absolutely tremendous. Their third one is one of my most favorite Stardom matches, just because the only reason it's not considered like at the highest level is because Utami had no chance in hell at winning. You know, like when there's no drama, it hurts the match, but they just had such a great match. Like it showed how much Utami got better in a year, which is again crazy to talk about. But this reign ended at 409 days, an incredible run for Utami Hashishita, establishing herself as one of the top stars in Stardom. Now, as we sit here in 2024 and we look back on this title reign, right? This is our first title reign series here on Stardom Road. So we want to look at the legacy of the reign itself and the legacy that the reign, you know, helped the champion, whoever it may be, and where Utami went from here, and so on and so forth. So let's talk about the legacy of the reign. One of the best World of Stardom title reigns of all time, period. That's not a debate. That is truth. And it pains me because I firmly believe Utami Hayashishita could have had the greatest World of Stardom title reign had she won that title now, right? Like, she could have had it because she's so much better now, and we saw what she could do here. At this time period of Stardom, how do you view the legacy of her reign?
So I remember when the reign began, there was a sense of trepidation for myself and amongst other fans, because it did feel like, obviously, Utami had been built up to a point where, like, you're our next superstar. You're the next person we're building around. And there was that sense of, can she live up to the hype? Can she live up to the pressure? And can she do this during the most difficult period to do it? Because she's getting zero crowd feedback. You know, you're getting a clap crowd. It's early enough, too, in those first few months where it's not really, like, crowds don't really know how to react. By the end of it all, they kind of knew, like, clapping at certain points, getting things going, and that they were allowed to kind of break that silence at certain points. But especially around this period, they weren't too sure. Utami had to convince people of how good she was without a crowd behind her verbally, and also encouraging them to come out and spend money at a time when a lot of people didn't want to leave the house. To carry Stardom through this period as the top champion, incredibly difficult. And it wasn't always easy for her. They started off right against Mayu, against Mono. But then they kind of chucked her in the fire a bit, and they didn't make, like, as much as people talk about, oh, this is where Super Utami began because she kicked out of all these big moves, they also didn't chuck her in the main event at every opportunity. She had to kind of re-earn that main event spot, and she did. And so the first half of this reign is all about proving herself. And then at the moment where she truly proves herself, everyone goes, well, what can you do for me now? Because especially towards the second half of that reign, it's not a question of, oh, who's going to dethrone Utami. It's like, well, we got to get to the second Shuri match before we find out. Whether Utami was beating Shuri or Shuri was beating Utami, we knew Hazuki wasn't winning that title. We knew Takumi wasn't winning that title. We knew Micah wasn't winning that title. And you yourself just said, when you know the result ahead of time, it takes away a little bit. So how does Utami make this period interesting when everyone's just looking to December? And I think it's a credit to how hard she worked in the ring and how much she grew during that time, that she was able to make those matches good and entertaining and make people want to go and see them when you knew they were just stepping stones to Shuri.
A way I look at the legacy of this title reign is that it is the title reign that put Stardom on the worldwide map, which is incredible when you think about why Utami joined Stardom. She joined Stardom because of a wrestler named Io Shirai. You may have heard of her. And she wanted to reach the levels that Io Shirai did. Io Shirai, of course, had been in WWE by the time that could even be a reality for Utami.
I trained together for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, and Io, you know, oh, well, she came from Stardom. Like, that's about what Io did, but that didn't make people watch. What made people watch was going out there for 43 minutes and delivering one of the greatest matches of all time. That's what Utami did in this title reign. And following up at the year-end event, one of the most watched Stardom events ever, and putting over the new champion, that's what Utami did with this title reign. It's almost unfair how good she was, because, again, this reign was all about establishing a new main eventer. And yet, at the end of it, we were talking about her putting Stardom out there to the world, right? And she is putting over someone who didn't necessarily need to be made a new main eventer, but they built the story so perfectly because of how great Utami was as champion and how and the chemistry they had. The legacy of this reign is arguably the most important in terms of making people notice. It's not, you know, Mayu's is most important for a completely different reason right before this, right? Like, a lot went on during her reign that she had to kind of lock in for and guide the ship. Utami wasn't there to guide the ship. Utami was there to establish herself, put Stardom out there to the world, and ultimately, by the end of it, set Stardom up for their biggest year ever. That's what Utami did.
And it was tough because, like, this wasn't an orchestrated attempt to reach the West.
Nope.
Yeah, this wasn't like them going, okay, what do we need to do to get American audiences to pay attention? Oh, we need to push Utami. This was accidental. These two went out to put on as good a match as they had. But they couldn't have prepared for the storm of excitement that came from that. And in many ways, like, you know, Utami wanting to be like Io, this was her Io moment, because there are periods in Stardom's history where people come and pay attention. And one of those key periods was the Threedom era when Io Shirai was doing all these incredible things. This is how I got into Stardom, was I was seeing stuff from these Japanese women going, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Years later, Utami would have that moment with Shuri. You know, people listening to Dave Meltzer who don't give a damn about Joshi wrestling. Like, they probably don't even pay attention to Japanese wrestling. And then they're hearing about these two women who got Dave to give a 5.5 star match. And I was like, oh, okay, well.
Tied for the highest rated women's match ever.
Yeah.
Per his
rating. And look, even if you think it's the greatest women's match of all time or not, I think what they did, they earned the chance to be considered amongst that. But that puts on a whole new pressure. And again, she's only 3.5 years in her professional wrestling career at this point. You know, to have the eyes of the entire world on this product, really for the first time.
Yep.
Stardom didn't have this kind of exposure before then, even amongst the heights of the Threedom era. It didn't. She had to carry that because she was the champion. She was the name, like people going, Shuri and Utami, Shuri and Utami. Oh, well, Utami's the champion. So they're going to go and pay attention and watch the matches that she was having. Huge amount of pressure for someone 3.5 years into her career. And the one or two things you could maybe knock on her, you know, the character work and stuff, the personality should really come and develop after the championship reign. But there's a whole new world of pressure there. And I think, all things considering, she handled that with a certain element of strength and grace that should not be understated, because people would have wilted under that pressure. She didn't.
You know, 2022 was like Stardom's big year, right? We talk about it all the time. It is the year of Shuri on top, Mayu on top, the story of Julia, all these amazing things. It's the most popular Stardom has been, probably still is the most popular Stardom has been. I don't, you know, even with them heading to America again now, that was the hike. I feel like everyone was talking, everyone was watching. It was just incredible.
I was still
And it's because of Utami's title reign. That's the thing, right? She wasn't champion. She didn't even do all that much in 2022. But it was because of what she did the year prior to make that a reality. I think that is also part of the title reign's legacy. Now let's talk about Utami's legacy. Utami Hayashishi is no longer part of Stardom, of course. She is on her way to be the ace of Marigold, a brand new promotion. But this title reign put her on the level of, or at least in the conversation of, the best. Whether the best is best in the world, best world champion, whatever it may be, she was in that conversation. And now, you know, you look at this title reign and how she grew afterwards, right? Some people can just stop. I've reached the top. I'm done. You know, I don't need to grow anymore. This is me.
She got the max contract.
Right, right. But she got better and better and better and better. And now she sits here in 2024, not only as one of the best in the world, but someone that everyone wants to see what's next. And I think, you know, this title reign is the ultimate sink or swim. It is what Stardom did so well for over a decade, right? This is the 10th anniversary year. This is the year of celebration for them. And they did exactly what they've done throughout their entire history. And they made a world champion, 409-day reign. And Utami, you know, she just rose to the level that she needed to. And way beyond. That's very important. No one saw her getting to the level that she did in this title reign. You can't even tell me the people. You can't tell me Rossi booked that. No one expected them to get to that level, but she did that because that's how special of a talent she is.
A lot of people, you see people talk about Utami as kind of being given the highway to success in Stardom. And yeah, look, she was booked to be strong from day one. But with that comes the true sink or swim nature of Stardom. Because, you know, we see lots of people given these chances to just get the ball and run with it. Utami was given it from day one, and she's given it again in this moment. But with that comes the pressure. Yeah, you know, they'll give you a chance, but if you can't carry it, they will take that ball away from you. And Utami had a lot of pressure from day one, and she had a lot of pressure here because she is the post-Mayu champion. She's the first person they're pushing in this new era of Stardom where they don't have the luxury of fallback wrestlers. If Utami didn't work, who are they putting the title on that's established? They'd have to take another risk or chuck it straight back on Mayu. They took the risk going with Utami. It paid off because she kept growing. And yeah, we've seen her talk about the pressures that she felt as champion, you know, from the not being good enough the main event to then having to follow up on the Shuri match. And you get that sense of relief after losing the title, and she can kind of beat herself a little bit more again. She doesn't have to present herself as the true top star of Stardom. She can relax a bit, and you see the character really grow in that moment because she's free of that title. But without that title, you don't get the ability for her to be free because she would have constantly been fighting. And you get, you know, after a year plus long reign with someone that people are going, she's being pushed down our throats kind of thing. And then not that long after that, people are going, I want another Utami reign. I want, you know, everything she did during that championship reign, everything she did in the immediate post-aftermath, people were ready to see more from her in that spot. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we never really got that because it was always kind of like we'll see it. Yeah. We talked about, like, as soon as she lost the title, I was like, okay, well, she's going to be a two-time champion. It's not a matter of when. Not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. When do they pull the trigger again? Like, if people could bet on Stardom, that would have been, like, the Vegas odds on that would have been horrific because it would have been so guaranteed. And people would have lost the money, at least right now. But
I remember tweeting, I don't remember when it was, but it was sometime in 2022. It was after a match. I said, she is now ready for the wonder of Stardom title. And people thought that was preposterous that I said that. She's like, what are you talking about? She held the world title. Different. She had developed her character to a point where she was a storyteller beyond the Shuri matches. Mm. Right. And she was a story. She was the complete player finally. And it was then that I said, she's going to have the greatest World of Stardom title reign when she gets that belt back. And here we are. She ain't getting that belt back anytime soon. No. But she can get a new belt likely very soon. This was the Utami Hayashishita series. An incredible title reign, the first that we'll attack. We have many more to attack. Obviously, the Mayu Iwatani one that we've been hinting at throughout this, her second title reign with the World of Stardom Championship, the highly acclaimed Io Shirai World of Stardom title reign, sometime down the road, the Saya Kamatani Wonder Stardom title reign, the Arisa Shiki one, the Momo Watanabe one. The list goes on and on. You get the point. So as we wrap up here, Trent, let the people know where they can find your stuff, whatever you're up to, and so on and so forth.
So you can find me on Twitter/X at OneUpCulture. As discussed previously on these shows now, most of my Joshi writing can be found at the relatively new now Rezura, RezuraMag.com. Recently dropped an article basically going through everything we know about Marigold right now, which is very convenient considering we've just spent 2 weeks talking about Tami Hashishista, who is the headstrong, the main event there. So go and check that out. I will be doing some more stuff, obviously, with Jeremy. Not revealing it just yet, but the month of May is going to be very exciting over there. Just be tuned. As soon as you hear the announcement, you'll know why I, and probably Scott as well, is quite excited about what we're doing for that month. You can also find ChocoCast, my Ghetto Move podcast, over on WrestleIn. New one is due to come out. We're a bit slow on that, but next one will come out because there's a lot to talk about there. But they're the main areas and things you can find. Obviously, still be doing plenty of writing and stuff. And yeah, some big stuff happening in Stardom right now coming up as well. So I'm sure I'll have things to say.
Yeah, make sure everyone checks out that. This is the one time in a long time that I actually have stuff to pitch and tell you the world about. It is Stardom, Stardom All-Star Grand Queendom Week. So if you want to see any of my content, check out the Five Star Joe Show. I'll be previewing and reviewing that show over on there. That's where you can hear from me about that. I'll also be previewing it for Voices of Wrestling and doing a written review for Wrestle Purist. By the time this episode comes out, my first article on Rezura will be out. And is, of course, about the match. Mayu Iwatani versus Sari. If you remember last year, I wrote an article about dreams coming true, which was, of course, Mercedes Moné versus Mayu Iwatani. It was only right we got the sequel this year. Mayu Iwatani versus Sari. That's the one. That's the one. So just read it. I'm very excited about it. I talked about their roads since the last time they were supposed to wrestle. Very different.
Changed.
Very different roads, but ultimately what we are seeing this coming Saturday is the best versus the best, plain and simple. Also, by the time this is out, or by the time you're listening to this, I will have an interview out with, you guessed it, the Marigold ace, Utami Hayashishita, over on Fightful.com. That will be live. I'll just give everyone one quote. I asked Utami, "Are you the ace of Marigold?" She said, and I quote, "Utami Hayashishita should be the ace of Marigold. I myself think so. I should be, I want to be, and I think I am." So if you want to see what Utami's mind is at in her new chapter, she also talks about Io Sky fighting Julia, maybe, finally, someday. Becoming the world champion of Marigold whenever that belt is debuted, why she left Stardom, and so much more. That was a lot. We'll be back next time.
You're a busy man.
I have been. It all hit me in the face today at one time, actually. not great. But we'll be back next time in 2 weeks' time, so we're back on our normal schedule. We don't know what we're talking about yet. That's okay. We will by then, and that's what matters.
Will we?
Probably not. For Trent, I'm Scott, and this is the Stardom Road Podcast here on the Countout Podcast Network. Until next time, see ya.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
Hey. Have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Hewson. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.